This is 89.9 WWNM. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans? Or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an unveiling of contemporary public art, an evening of choral masterworks, or a literary treasure hunt, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. New Orleans' downtown landscape will be transformed as Unframed, a project of Arts Council New Orleans presented by the Hellis Foundation, celebrates this weekend with an unveiling block party. The project is the first multi-mural exhibition of large-scale contemporary artwork in the Arts District. Joining me with a sneak peek at Unframed are Alphonse Smith, Deputy Director of Arts Council New Orleans, and artist Carl Joe Williams. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tell us more about this arts adventure. What is Unframed, presented by the Hellis Foundation?
Unframed is a project of the Arts Council of New Orleans that features signature murals in downtown New Orleans. The epicenter of the project is in the Arts District, and the footprint widens out into South Market. The project itself features majority local artists who live and work in New Orleans, who have studios based here, also artists who present around the world.
What is the expected impact for artists and for downtown New Orleans?
For about 4 years, the Arts Council had been looking for a partner to support large-scale murals in downtown because the community and artists and businesses had been asking about it. So we wanted to first satisfy the request of our community members. We wanted to create a mural portfolio that would be easily walkable, one where tourists and residents alike could traverse the district, but also stop by businesses, restaurants, galleries, museums, and see all of the district itself. We wanted to provide opportunities for investment in our local artists, but also create a gravity point for New Orleans to be seen as a contemporary arts destination internationally. I think the project so far is accomplishing that.
Carl, you were one of several artists that were chosen. Mm-hmm. Tell me, how were you attracted to the project?
Well, I had seen murals in other major cities, and I used to always kind of say to myself, it would be nice if New Orleans had more of a mural culture or more of a public art presence. When I heard about the call to artists, I saw that as an attempt for our city to actually go down that path.
And what are you exploring in your mural?
I'm starting off with more African kinds of textiles as a start to actually explore color studies and really starting to think about utilizing those rhythms and patterns to talk about, you know, maybe deeper issues, but not so overt.
What will we see?
Well, you will see a very colorful, very rhythmic expression on a very large wall, 135 feet by 22 feet high. So it's very wide. It's actually a pretty nice wall, fairly large, across the street from Emerald's restaurant on Chapultepec.
827 Chapultepec Street. It's on the facade of the New Orleans Copper Inc. building.
Carl, tell us a little bit about your process as you create a mural.
We had to pressure wash the wall. And once the wall was pressure washed and we realized that things could adhere to the wall and that it would last long, we went in with some color primer to actually create a foundation. And in most cases, my work starts with patterns. It builds up in layers. I almost see it as more of a visual foundation. And I tend to think about my work in musical terms sometimes. So I see it more as a rhythmic foundation to build something on top of. I was born and raised here in New Orleans. I grew up on Louisiana and Daniel. I went to Holy Ghost School, Warren Easton, and I also went to NOCA. And at 18, I moved away and went to college at the Atlanta College of Art. And that's where I got my BFA. And I stayed there for quite a few years and moved back in the early 2000s.
What does an opportunity like this mean to you?
Oh, man, it means a lot to me just being back in the city and being a part of the arts culture here. It means a lot to actually be able to create public works that resonate with people.
What is it, Alphonse, about murals that attracts people to these works?
I think that the initial aesthetic of public art, particularly murals, which tend to have lively imagery, vibrant colors, that sort of thing, is an initial attractor. But I also find that when folks kind of come up on a wall, it's a gallery outdoors. I mean, that's why the project is unframed. It's unframed from a museum presentation, and it's out in the urban landscape. It's publicly accessible, highly visible, and allows folks to imagine what the artist's intent is, what story the artist is trying to tell in the mural itself. It also is a gravity point for bringing community members together to actually create a work and to sort of speak to issues that we see common in our everyday life and in our lived experiences.
How many other artists are involved in the project, and who are they?
We have 5 artists in total, technically, 5 lead artists. Some of those artists are collaborating with other artists to create the works. They are largely from New Orleans, and then we have one guest duo from Poland, Etem Crew, who is known internationally as maybe one of the top 5 muralists in the world. They're creating a mural at South Market. Brandon B. Mike Odoms is also going to create a collaborative mural along with the Young Artist Movement, which is led by Sarah Woodward and Alberta Wright, 2 artists who teach young people various arts and design skills to create public art. We have a professor duo from Tulane School of Architecture, Adam Modisette and Carrie Norman. They're actually going to be creating sort of a homage to New Orleans architecture on a wall near Julian Chapitulis. We have Momo, who created a large-scale mural, sort of abstract geometric design at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art.
So when will the works be unveiled to the public?
So the works will be unveiled June 1st. Arts District New Orleans Gallery Nights, the first Saturdays, on a 400 block of Julia Street. We're going to have family-friendly activities, some food, drinks, and music. It's going to be a good time.
And how long will the murals be on view?
The murals are going to be up for as long as we possibly can have them up. Once they're up, there's no plans to have them removed or painted over. So just like with all public art, we want them to last as long as possible.
Alphonse Smith, Deputy Director of Arts Council New Orleans, and artist Carl Joe Williams. Thanks for stopping by.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Unframed, presented by the Hellis Foundation, kicks off with an unveiling block party in the 400 block of Julia Street, Saturday evening, June 1st, from 6 until 9. More info is online at artsneworleans.org. The Symphony Chorus of New Orleans closes its season with works of hope and comfort, performing Durufle's beloved Requiem and Vox Magnificat. Music director Stephen Edwards is here. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Diane.
You have chosen 2 powerful works to end your season. How did you go about making your choice?
Well, we wanted to do some pieces that were really the meat and potatoes of the choral repertoire. The Bach Magnificat is a work that we've only done once before. It actually isn't done that often, and it's one of the great, great masterpieces. Very colorful, celebratory piece. The Durufle makes a lovely contrast with it, being 2 centuries later and much softer, a more a comforting piece. The 2 works happen to share a string orchestra and 3 trumpets, and the composers use the trumpets especially in very different ways.
Pretty cool. That made the decision a lot easier for you.
It does. It's nice to keep everybody busy the whole time.
Let's take them one by one. What will we experience?
Well, with the Durufle Requiem, we have a piece that features a virtuoso organ part, which will be played by Paul Weber, who's the organist choirmaster at Trinity, and that really wouldn't be possible not only without a great organ player, but without a wonderful organ. So we'll have the Trinity organ and Paul Weber as the stars of that piece. The Bach Magnificat includes also chamber orchestra, parts for flutes and oboes, and 3 trumpets and drums, and that employs 5 soloists, and there are various arias, duets, and trios, plus, of course, the magnificent choruses that feature our singers in symphony chorus.
So let's talk about these composers. What was going on in their lives when they wrote these works?
For Durufle, the work was begun at the end of World War II under the collaborationist Vichy regime. They had, in an attempt to show their appreciation for culture, had promised composers that they would be paid for cantatas or symphonies or operas. Durufle finished the work when the war was over and a different government was in charge. He came to the government and said, "All right, I wrote my piece. I want to be paid." And to, I think, everybody's surprise, they paid him more than the Vichy government had promised. So it's a work that came to be at the end of World War II, dedicated to the composer's father. Durufle was very self-critical. He only published 13 works as opus publications. And this is certainly his most popular and beloved piece.
And it's also a nod to the Gregorian chant?
Yes. In fact, it's almost all based on the Gregorian chant Mass for the Dead. So Durufle started out with those melodies, those pitches, and arranged a rhythmic and harmonic world around Gregorian chant, which is, of course, what he as a church musician and composer was most familiar with. They're really masterful pieces. If you know Gregorian chant, these are all tunes that you'll recognize. But what he has done with them is really astonishingly beautiful.
It's a lush work.
Mm-hmm.
Both pieces are religious.
Yes, and in different ways. One, as you said, is a comforting piece. The other is really a big splash of wonderful color. The Bach was written when Bach first came to his new job as the church musician at the Thomas Church in Leipzig. And he wrote it for his first Christmas there. He revived it several times, and 8 years later he transposed it to a different key so that the trumpets could be more brilliant. But it's obviously a work that he liked because he performed it many times in Leipzig.
Now, who are the soloists?
Our soloists for the Bach are soprano Joy Mead, soprano Ruth Ann Chadwick, mezzo-soprano Sheila McDermott, tenor Dana Wilson, and bass baritone Michael Mead. Sheila McDermott will also be performing the mezzo solo in the Durufle, and I should mention Jonathan Gearhart, the cellist, because the Liberame in the Durufle is really a duet for mezzo-soprano cello solos with organ accompaniment.
And the chamber orchestra?
The chamber orchestra is all local professionals, two flutes, two oboes, trumpets, drums, strings. I believe they are mostly members of the LPO.
And how are you hoping to connect with audiences?
Well, I think these are two really attractive pieces. Even if you didn't know the words and even if you didn't relate to the religious content of them, they're just magnificent music. They're great melodies. There's tremendous orchestration, lots of color, lots of variety. So I think it will be an entertaining as well as uplifting and inspiring concert.
Can we talk a little bit more about the religious content as to what the works are about?
Well, the Requiem is the setting of the Requiem for the Dead, the Mass for the Dead. Durufle, like Fauré before him, chose to focus on the more pastoral or comforting texts. So it's not like the Verdi Requiem with a big last day of judgment. It is a comforting Mass for the Dead. The Bach is a setting of the Canticle of Mary from Luke in the Gospel. And it's Mary's, my soul doth magnify the Lord, my spirit rejoiceth in God my Savior. So it is her canticle of praise that has traditionally been part of the Vespers in the Catholic and the Lutheran Church. And that is the service that on feast days is usually done with as much pomp and circumstance as possible. And that's why we've got all these trumpets and drums and instruments playing.
And how have things been going so far?
Oh, it's great fun. I always love working on Bach, because it's great fun to rehearse. It's a challenge that you never quite make, but the process of working on Bach, for singers especially, is always a great use of time.
Stephen Edwards, music director of the Symphony Chorus of New Orleans, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Save the date. The Symphony Chorus presents Durufle's Requiem and Bach's Magnificat in its season-ending concert, Friday, June 7th at Trinity Church, 1329 Jackson Avenue. More info is online at symphonychorus.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. here's a heads up for book lovers. The South's largest used book sale kicks off this weekend. Yes, the Symphony Book Fair, which benefits the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra, opens in the UNO Lakefront Arena beginning on Friday. LPO volunteers are gearing up for a big crowd. Spokeswoman Phyllis Jordan fills us in on what you can expect at this year's sale. Phyllis, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
There are signs strategically placed around town that read Symphony Book Fair, OMG, huge. Care to elaborate?
Well, we have a lot of books this year, especially in certain categories. And I just felt that the public needed to know that because it's a real opportunity. The categories that we are overloaded in are cookbooks, children's, religion, all of our history categories, biography and memoir is always overloaded. But those main categories are just amazing.
How does it compare to prior years?
More books than we've had in past years.
To what do you attribute this year's windfall?
I think the more marketing we do for the book fair, the more awareness people have. There are a number of people of a certain age, i.e. my own group, who are downsizing their houses, and so they're cleaning out their libraries. And I think that people in general, especially younger people, are really attuned to not having so much clutter. It's the old Marie Kondo thing. So there's just a general, you know, wanting to kind of clear some things out. Now, I have heard in the hoarding arena that it's not hoarding if it's books. So just if you happen to have a lot of books around, you don't have to claim hoarder status.
It's a collection.
It's a thing. Right, right. And there's a place to put them when you're done with them, and it's Symphony Book Fair. So it goes into another life.
So let's talk about the collection. What are we likely to find this year?
We have a large collection of books on Joseph Tito and Yugoslavia and Slavic history and culture. Joseph Tito was the dictator of Yugoslavia in the post-World War II era and was a pretty terrible ruler. Several different small ethnic groups and nationalities were brought together to form Yugoslavia, and there was always tension in there, so it was difficult to rule and so forth. Anyway, someone has been looking at this person and this geographic area for a long time and had a great collection of books on these topics. Those are the kind of oddball things that show up. They're wonderful. We also have a wonderful collection of Cuban poetry. I think it's before and after the revolution of 1960. Poetry in Spanish, as well as a lot of other Spanish literature. We have just amazing things that show up. One I found recently, I found it myself, and I was so proud to have spotted it. It's a first edition of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by Roald Dahl.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, those things just make your heart warm, and someone's going to treasure that. One of the wonderful things about working Symphony Book Fair during the year, collecting the books, is the recognition that people in New Orleans are out there reading really interesting stuff. You know, we have our fair share of blockbusters and mysteries and sci-fi, and nothing to put those down. Those are great books. But there's just this wonderful academic and literary group that are reading things that I admire a lot. Things I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole because they're way over my head. But it's impressive. We have science and nature. We have books on the South. We have books on military history and American history. And teacher aides. We have a whole bunch of books that assist teachers in their jobs as well as homeschoolers. They're beginning reading books up through high school age. So any topic you can think of.
Now, you also have other items in the collection.
Correct.
In addition to books.
Yes, and that's another area where we have an overflow. DVDs and CDs, and those, again, are very, very inexpensive. Some vinyl. We have sheet music and a lot of items that would benefit music teachers, educational books about music. And our sheet music is very extensive as well. And we have a huge art collection. Some are framed, some are flat posters, some are prints, some are original oils and watercolors. So it's a really broad array of artwork.
And you have something special for children.
We do. On the last day of the sale, that's Sunday, June 2nd, we have a fill a bag for $5 sale of children's books. So a parent and a child or a grandparent or, you know, some adult and a child, they can come in. We give them white shopping bags. The kids can decorate the bag. And then the parent and the child can go in and just pick out all the books that will fit into a large shopping bag.
This sale is a popular one that many people look forward to each year. Tell us, how did it get its start?
Well, just to be clear, I wasn't there at the beginning.
That was 66 years ago?
That was 66 years ago. I was still in school. It was some volunteers with the Symphony Volunteers Group, which is now called the LPO Volunteers. These people got together and decided to do this to raise money for the orchestra. It has generally been women doing this. I'm told that when the ladies started, they were wearing white gloves to handle these books. We don't do that anymore. And they've been in a number of locations around the city for their collections and a number of locations for the sale as well. But the UNO Arena is just a great platform for us.
How does the sale actually help the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra?
We have some expenses during the year to run this warehouse. We have expenses for the rental of the arena, and we hire a moving company to move those boxes of books. But we take what we can get at the sale, take our expenses out, and give the rest to the orchestra. Last year, we donated $45,000. The first day of the sale, as you may know, we charge $15 to come in for the first 6 hours only.
And that's on Friday.
Right. That's from 9 to 3. The people who come then are book dealers, either brick-and-mortar stores or online sellers, and serious book collectors. So they're coming to get the very first shot at all the books. After 3 o'clock on Friday, the rest of the sale is completely free admission.
Phyllis, what does an event like this one say about our community?
Not everyone is looking at their iPhones all the time. People are reading, and isn't it wonderful?
Yeah. Symphony Book Fair spokeswoman Phyllis Jordan, thanks.
Thank you.
The Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra with LPO volunteers kick off the Symphony Book Fair May 31st through June 2nd at the UNO Lakefront Arena. More info is online at lpovolunteers.org. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45, when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.